First of all, I'd like to take you through an introduction to the results presentation, which has been filed with the ASX and is now available to you all. And I think there are copies which you all have access to, which have been distributed. If anyone missed out, we can certainly get you one later. The good news is that Babcock & Brown Wind Partners finds itself investing in an environment where the investment rationale for wind energy is still strong. The support for wind energy investment is driven by rising prices of fossil fuels and therefore the cost of traditional sources of energy, increasing cost of carbon emission management, and in fact electricity contributes about 45% of carbon emissions in the world. Security and surety of energy supply, we see this particularly in EU countries. Increasing cost competitiveness of wind energy, where only coal is now a cheaper source of fuel for electricity. And increased demand for electricity, with most consultants in the area estimating that growth in electricity demand from today to 2020 will grow by about 65%. And who or what is BBW today, Babcock & Brown Wind Partners today? We are a specialised investment fund. We are an investment fund of scale dedicated to delivering security holder value through acquiring and operating wind energy generation assets, and we currently operate across three continents. We are an owner and an operator of a portfolio of quality wind farms, and these are diversified by a range of indices, particularly geography, wind resource, currency, equipment supplier, customer and regulatory regime. We're a specialised fund and we're managed by BMB, Babcock & Brown, who are in their own right an experienced advisor, manager and investor in the wind energy, having been involved in this sector now since 1989. I'd like to touch on some of the milestones for the year, give you a financial summary of the result, a bit of an overview on the portfolio and then some distribution guidance. The key milestones you see before you represent a very active year in acquisitions. We listed in October of last year with a PDS and an initial portfolio of four wind farms, one in Australia and three in Spain. Through our acquisition program, which was outlined in the PDS, we then acquired another 12 wind farms during the year. And in fact, today, we sit today with 19 wind farms fully operational. We're very excited during the year that, in fact, one of the wind farms we bought was in France, because this added another element of diversity, and that's the Fruges wind farm, which is currently under construction, and we'll talk more about that later in the presentation. During the year also, we did a capital raising where we raised just over $118 million, and we also negotiated a multi-option facility agreement for 150 million euros. In terms of the financial summary, we had revenue of $73 million compared to an IPO forecast of 77. This resulted in an EBITDA after associates of 51.8 million compared to an IPO forecast of 57.5. Our reported profit after tax be a loss of 16.2 million. The net operating cash flow is 34.2 million and the net debt to enterprise value ratio is 30.9%. Slightly under that, which was represented in the IPO. Our 2006 distribution per security will be 10.2 cents, to be paid on the second half of which will be paid on the 29th of September. And the number of securities on issue is just over $575 million. In addition to the revenue, the source of that revenue is a portfolio of wind generation assets, which represent a year of quite active acquisition, in fact 8 months of active acquisition process, to leave us with a mature portfolio, I said, of 16 wind turbines at the end of 13th of June and 19 turbines at the beginning of July. To just pick out of this slide some of the indices of that maturity, you see that our forecast generation at IPO was just under 360 gigawatt hours. And at June, that had reached an ability to produce energy of just on 1,145 gigawatt hours, which is three times that of the IPO, and that's increased since that date. under construction. In terms of the pipeline, we still have 800 megawatt of capacity, which are bound up by framework agreements, which we can still acquire. Under construction, we have 181 megawatts, and a bulk of these are down at Lake Bonnie 2, which is a very significant wind farm of 159 megawatts, which when completed will be one of the largest wind farms in the world, particularly when it's combined with Lake Bonnie 1. So under construction we have a significant capacity to generate energy, and we have the 181 megawatts under construction to produce 527 gigawatt hours per annum. We've diversified the portfolio, and the industry that you see before you is not only a number of wind farms but the geographical spread, which as I mentioned earlier is one of the indices we use for diversification. And we see that the diversification strategy represented here, that is the number of wind farms over a number of different wind regions, is a very key part of our investment strategy, which allows us to provide more certain cash flows and wealth creation for our investors. I'm pleased to announce distribution guidance, and the BBW board has revised the financial year 2007 distribution guidance to 12.5 cents per security. This is an increase from the IPO forecast, which was 11.2 cents per security, and it represents an increase of 11.6%. We're further targeting at least 3.5% compound annual growth in distributions over the medium term. Now I'd like to take you through some more detailed slides in relation to our results. The slide before you, I think, gives you a good example of the impact on revenue from the IPO forecast. The IPO forecast was $77 million of revenue, and we had a number of two key non-recurring items and a number of operational variances. So the composition of that revenue was different from that anticipated at IPO. In particular, we received $3.8 million of pre-commissioning revenue from Alinta, which positively impacted on the revenue. But then we suffered delays, particularly to the Olivo wind farms and Niederrhein, which impacted negatively to just over $9 million. In terms of operational variances, we had low wind speeds, particularly in May and June, in Spain, Germany, and Lake Bonnie 1, which had a negative impact of $8.7 million. But we benefited from the Olivo market option tariff in Spain, which is still a very strong market for wind energy, and this provided a positive variance of $6.1 million. We also benefited from our new acquisition, IFL, which we acquired in January of this year, and that was a $2.9 million benefit, which is not envisaged in the IPO document. In addition, from Alinta, we had an additional benefit of $1.2 million of net revenue after we netted availability reductions and compensation for loss of ability. Availability. This left us with a revenue actual for 2006 of $73 million. So I said it's $4 million below IPO. How this translated into EBITDA is set out on this slide. The $73 million of revenue, from the $73 million of revenue, we had operating costs of $13.4 million, which was roughly in line with IPO, but corporate costs of $14.1 million, which was about just under $5 million higher than the IPO, and a significant part of that was due to the higher management base fee and also some additional due diligence consulting costs. We had a positive foreign exchange gain of $4.2 million. This was a one-off gain on the euro-denominated settlement of the acquisitions of the delayed Olivo wind farm. And that left us with an EBITDA of $49.7 before associates. The US share of equity accounted profit is $2.1 million, but you'll note also that we received an additional US cash distribution of $5 million. The EBITDA after associates was $51.8 million, therefore, which is 71% of revenue. Set on page 14 on the presentation, and I think the table before you, is a cash flow summary. From the EBITDA after associates of $51.8 million for the year, we had net operating cash flow of $34.3 million. In terms of the balance sheet, the balance sheet is left undergeared. The net debt to EV ratio is 30.9%, which, as I mentioned earlier, is a slightly lower ratio than forecast in the IPO. Our net interest expense is $11.2 million, and our net interest cover is 4.6 times, with our average interest rate across the project finance book at 4.9%. Importantly, our proportion of debt at fixed interest rates is 86%. The portfolio, as I said, has grown in maturity. We now have 19 operating wind farms, and we start the financial year 07, those wind farms in full operation. We also have the ability to buy two new wind farms with 31.5 megawatt capacity, which we expect to buy at the end of this month or beginning of next month. This slide, which many of you may have seen variations of before, really indicates that the portfolio has grown and diversified significantly in line with our investment strategy. We started the year in two regions with a forecast generation, as I said, of just under 360 gigawatt hours. We ended the year in six regions, and we start 07 in eight regions, having grown our energy production forecast to 1,360 gigawatt hours. The wind regions themselves also add to the diversification and are part of our investment strategy to help secure sustainable cash flows. I'd now like to take you through those key regions and countries and the examination of the portfolio in a little more detail. In particular, Australia. We start with Australia. The Australian portfolio achieved revenue of $36 million, which contributed about 48.6% of EBITDA. The energy production in Australia slightly exceeded budget, as indicated there. The outlook for Australia is interesting. We have very good opportunities in Australia, but there's no doubt that we need more regulatory support. The mandatory renewable energy target, MRETS, is largely satisfied. A number of states are promoting separate targets, for example, South Australia, 20% by 2014. Given that Australia has excellent sites for wind, we had hoped that we would achieve more support sometime in the future. Having said that, our existing assets are good assets. Alinta has reached practical completion, and as we announced some weeks ago, Vestas, the EPC equipment supplier, has agreed to pay us $5.25 million in compensation for lost revenue. We also have a variation agreement of the EPC contract, which provides for a timetable and undertakings by Vestas to complete the outstanding technical issues. The interesting thing to note about Alinta is it's an operating wind farm now, and it's operating slightly under, about 10% under what it its current capacity, its potential capacity, as some of the technical problems that occur tend to occur in the very high wind regime. So it's producing energy, it's taking advantage of an extremely good wind regime in Western Australia. And we now have the documentation and the arrangements in place and a relationship with Vestas which we think will have this wind farm see final completion in approximately 12 months with the outstanding technical issues resolved. In terms of new assets, you would have also seen the announcement the construction of Lake Bonnie Stage 2 has commenced. And as I've mentioned already, this is a very large wind farm and completion is expected in mid-2008. The balance of our overseas portfolio is very important to us. The three largest wind energy producers in the world in order are Germany, Spain and the US, and we're well represented in all three. The Spanish portfolio achieved revenue of $32.4 million and contributed 41.9% of EBITDA. As mentioned, delays in the acquisition of the Olivo wind farms led to a reduced production, which had an impact. The energy production in Spain was in line with our P50 forecast until March this year, and then we had the poor wind speeds in May and June. The low wind speeds for May and June resulted in a loss of 36.3 gigawatt hours. This was lower than the long-term forecast. The outlook for Spain indicates that the BBW portfolio will benefit from the first full year of production there. We have framework agreements with Gamesa, which is the second largest turbine manufacturer in the world and also one of the largest developers, to acquire 450 megawatts in capacity of new wind farms in Spain. Pricing under the current market option is very attractive and at a considerable premium to the fixed tariff. The pricing mechanism for the market option is up for review in approximately November, December this year, but our forecasts have already considered that review and we've fixed an appropriate level of tariff in terms of the expected outcome from the review of the market option. The German portfolio generated revenue of $4.7 million and contributed approximately 6.1% of our EBITDA. Again, we had delays in Niederrhein and we lost 7 gigawatt hours of energy. The portfolio in Germany outperformed against the IPO forecast, which mainly resulted from the contribution of Eiffel, which was not in the forecast and was acquired in January this year. Again, in Germany, we will benefit from the first full year of production. We do have two series of framework agreements in Germany, one with Renerco and the other with Planbeck, which could provide a further capacity of 400 megawatts, subject to these framework agreements. They are due to be delivered over the next few years. The wind market in Germany is, of course, a very mature market. The turbine manufacturers continue to pass on cost increases and they are placing pressure on return hurdles. We will consider repowering opportunities in Germany on a selective basis due to the German market. The acquisition of the package of assets identified in the PDS at IPO, which we call the 0304 portfolio, was delayed by a month, which resulted in the US cash distribution being lower than the IPO forecast. The 0304 parcel generated a total cash distribution of $7.1 million, inclusive of an equity accounted profit of $2.1 million, but as I've indicated, there was also an additional US cash distribution of $5 million. Probably the highlight in relation to the US assets this year is the acquisition of Crescent Ridge. This underscores the point that we made in one of the very first parts of the slide in this presentation, which is that wind energy generation is starting to compete much more actively with traditional generation, and except for coal, seems to be able to compete well on price. The sale of renewable energy for Crescent Ridge is sold into the open market into the PJM grid, which is the northeast grid, which is the northeast grid of America, and is a very active grid with quite an appetite for renewable energy. New assets in Australia, by the way, I've been asked to, for those on the phone, to indicate that we're on page 25 of the slides. In relation to new assets, we have acquired a second parcel of assets, which we call the US05 assets, and that included Cumier and Sweetwater 3. Two assets remaining in that parcel, Bear Creek and Jersey Atlantic, which have a combined capacity of 31.5 megawatts, will be acquired sometime over the next 4 to 5 weeks. We have significant further pipeline of opportunities available in the US over the next few years. The US market is set to grow significantly. In fact, in the last 12 months, it was the fastest growing market in the world. And this is in line with the extension of the production tax credit scheme and state-based renewable targets. Although the existing scheme was due to expire in 07, to some extent has contributed to a very overheated turbine market, with turbines being in short supply. There is legislation both in the Senate and the Congress to extend this scheme at least to 2011. As I mentioned, We've contracted to buy our first wind farm in France, and this is called Fruges. It's under construction. It's currently running on time and on budget. The expected completion date is mid-2007. There are other assets available as we work with the developer there, Ostwind, and the regulatory and industry environment appears quite attractive. Total installed capacity in France grew by 182%, albeit off a low base, but they do have some quite aggressive targets to reach in wind energy generation by 2010. The next part of the presentation, I want to deal with the outlook for BBW. I'm on slide 28. We start the year with a balance sheet where the gearing is quite conservative. And on this slide, I would indicate the gearing for BBW on a consolidated basis at book value is 35%. And on market value with a share price of $1.50, the calculation is 31%. It's a good position to be in at the start of this year. As the wind energy drivers on slide 20, indicate on slide 29, remain robust. Countries are definitely adopting wind, particularly in Europe, and that's a result of both cost competitiveness, security of energy supply and environmental factors, as well as the increased demand for electricity, which I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation. In relation to cost competitiveness, this has been underlined also by the increasing volatility and uncertain fossil fuel price trajectory. Wind energy, as I have said, is increasingly competitive, and ourselves, we have expanded our market risk option with both with present risk and the market option which we adopt in Spain. Wind energy represents an indigenous fuel source, and particularly in Europe, where there is historic dependence on imports, particularly imports of fossil fuels, which are concentrated in geopolitically sensitive regions. This is an important driver and remains so today. The environmental factors, which we highlighted in the IPO, in the PDS document, remain strong drivers, as there is deepening concerns about the threat of global warming, reducing dependence on and depletion of non-renewable resources, and reduction in emissions shaped by the Kyoto Protocol, 5.2% by 2012. There's increased demand for electricity, new global capacity of 4,800 gigawatts required by 2030. Demand will double between 2002 and 2030, and again, as I said earlier, between now and 2020, the 65% increase is expected, which also plays to one of wind's other advantages, in that wind farm energy generation is reasonably quick to build and deploy. In addition, there is a need to replace one-third of the current installed capacity during that period of growth. But there is challenges to the business. As we consolidate our existing portfolio and manage growth, and also integrate global operations and reporting and risk management, we're now managing over 600 turbines, soon to be in 5 countries and 3 continents. Management, we have deployed resources and systems, and at the individual wind farm level, these are working quite well. The challenge, of course, as we discussed in our result in the announcement on the 3rd of August and supplementary materials on the 14th of August, relies in automating and making sure that this reporting is timely. Direct lines of reporting will exist in each region, and we monitor all operational, financial and regulatory risks. It is an ongoing challenge. As we aspire to best practice, we're still on that journey, notwithstanding that the systems we have today are starting to work very effectively. Capital management is an ongoing concern of both the BBW board and management. Our use of our balance sheet, the capacity to maximise security holder wealth, is something that our investors would expect for us, and we are evaluating funding options as we speak. The aim is to optimise our capital structure and find the best match between our assets and liabilities. We also aim to minimise the impact of the key variability and risk in our business, which is wind. We saw the impact of variability of wind in May and June when our portfolio was immature and just growing. But we start this year with 19 wind farms, fully operational and still growing. And we continue to diversify in a number of regions, and we will consider acquisitions of assets in productive wind regions. And in due course, of course, we are examining all acquisitions and their contribution to reducing the impact of wind variability. In due course also will provide relevant data to the market. All of the above leaves us to the view that we have a portfolio position to deliver value. Not only are the drivers that we identified in the PDS still in place, but there are new drivers which we have identified in this presentation. I'm sorry, we're on slide 31 for those on the phone. I keep forgetting, I apologise. We also have an under-geared balance sheet, and the portfolio now is, in our view, positioned to deliver the value. Portfolio consolidation certainly is a focus for us this year. There will be ongoing integration of operating risk management and reporting systems, and as we increase the scale and penetration within existing regions in financial year 07. Our pipeline is still robust, but in fact we have many opportunities to invest, and we can't possibly invest in all of the opportunities that are presented to us. We therefore have to apply the investment criteria which were set out in the PDS. The balance sheet capacity will enable us to deliver security holder wealth, including through undertaking further accretive acquisitions, without the need to raise material ordinary equity in the near term. In conclusion, I'd like to point out that the investment rationale for wind energy on slide 32 continues to improve. Financial year 2006 was characterised by acquisition activity. The outlook for 07 is consolidation and continued focus on optimising the portfolio. As I mentioned, capital management initiatives are a high priority and likely to minimise the need for equity raising in the near term. We have a number of potential accretive growth opportunities through Babcock and Brown and the BBW contracted pipeline. The distribution guidance is an upgrade to 12.5 cents, and we continue to target 3.5% compound annual growth in distributions. The appendix to your presentation has some items relating to IFRS and a portfolio summary for you to review. And that ends the formal part of my presentation. Thank you. I think the process that we are undertaking now is questions from the floor. And for those of you who are listening on the phone, we're going to do the questions from the floor, and at that stage I'll ask the monitor to take questions over the telephone.
Thank you. Tom Murphy, Deutsche Bank. Just a question about the supply of turbines. Can you just comment on any initiatives you might have underway to ensure the flow and availability of turbines, because it's becoming quite a global problem?
Yes, there's a few things, Tom. One is we have the benefit of our relationship, of course, with Babcock & Brown, who's been a very active developer in wind projects all around the world. And in fact, in the US, they had the prescience to actually see what was coming and pre-purchased a number of turbines to ensure that their projects were available in time and underway to take the benefit of the 07 production tax credit curfew. In other parts of the world, for example, our framework agreements in Spain with Gamesa, we actually have the pricing and structure and investment hurdles set in those contracts, which gives us some form of protection. In addition, we rely very much on the advice and the activity of Babcock and Brown to actually find investments and to develop the relationship they have with turbine suppliers. And because they're one of the biggest purchasers, and I think already our fund is the fourth largest owner of wind farms in the world, we, of course, have greater say and more influence with turbine manufacturers than many of the smaller developers who are indeed struggling. So it's really the size and scale, experience, personal relationships with the turbine manufacturers that we're seeing, particularly in Europe with people like Vestas and Nordex and Gamesa, where probably our needs are catered for slightly ahead of many other needs. In addition, we're seeing new entrants into the market. So we actually see with the extension of the production tax credits from 07 after 2011 and 2012, some heat going out of the market, because that certainly did create a lot of global heat in demand for turbines. But we are seeing Siemens, for example, becoming more active in the market. Mitsubishi are now very, very active and very committed in the market. Some of the smaller turbine manufacturers, such as Repower, have managed to find equity backers and refinance, becoming quite aggressive in the market, increasing their production capacity. The bigger turbine manufacturers have increased their production capacity. Gamesa has opened a plant in Portugal. It's extended its production capacity in Spain. Vestas has done similar things. Nordex, which was struggling to meet its orders, as I said, now has new investment. And what we do see, how it really translates itself to, is that if you have the cash and you have the balance sheet, what the turbine manufacturers are doing is establishing a pecking order where people who can actually provide firm orders with certain payments, so there's little credit risk on those orders, get preference. And we would put Babcock and Brown and ourselves, BBW, in that category. For July and August, the wind data for July and August. First of all, one of the things, the points I want to make, which we didn't make in the supplementary materials, is that because of our financial reporting year, we end our financial year in May and June, and we start the next financial year, July and August, in summer. And traditionally, for those of you who haven't read the materials, I mean, there are previous presentations. The hotter months of the year are the lower producing months. So what we've had in July and August is, compared to our revised forecast in terms of gigawatt hours produced, a slightly lower production for those months. But in terms of our forecast for the whole year, it's not a material miss.
Johan Hedstrom from Ord Minnett. I'm wondering, with the shortfalls in wind, were they extremes or are they sort of normal variability in the wind? And all of them were negatives this year, and you're going to diversify your portfolio to reduce that risk, but I'm wondering if it's really unusually low wind conditions.
Sorry, Johan. It was unusually low. The summer in Spain in May was the hottest summer in 90 years. Germany keeps a national wind index, and the wind for June was below anything recorded in that index since it started over 20 odd years. So they were extremes. The element of extremes are also evidenced by the fact that the way we forecast is based on statistical probability. So the mere fact that we forecast on a P50 middle of the bell curve, and those extremes are at one end, by their very nature mean that they're half a dozen standard deviations away from where they should be. So it's kind of self-perpetuating item that they were extremes based on the statistical probability built up from a wealth of data and analysis on that those particular sites and countries over a period number of years. The other thing about that is that on a whole of year basis, with wind farms operating for the whole year, we would have been in a much better position to cope with that. But as we've said in our supplementary materials, we started the IPO with four, we had 11 by January and 16 by May. But they were extremes. It's fair to say too, just one of the things I think we pointed out at the time was that the forecasting done on the IPO didn't have the detailed profiling which we intend to do as a group in the future, where we will actually look at a whole year's data based on data which we are now collecting on our own portfolio last year, this year, next year. So we think our forecast, as we learn about our win regions and our win data, will become more and more accurate, so we can actually profile much better through the year.
BVI have this metric that equates operating cash flow plus or minus some other bits and pieces to dividends. How does your framework work?
Our framework.
How do you equate? BVI have a metric where they take operating cash flow and they deduct some maintenance capex and do some other things with it, and they come up with a dividend, and that's what they pay us, and they say therefore the dividend equates to operating cash flow and isn't paid out of debt.
Yeah.
How does your mechanism work?
Our mechanism works that we calculate what we think is a maintainable distribution out of our net operating cash flow, and we aim to pay out of our net operating cash flow, but we're not. That may vary because we are still growing and acquiring, making acquisitions. So there may be times when our distribution in the future may be paid out of cash. What it will never be paid out of is debt. But because we have to, at some stages, we may have to make step changes in our growth pattern, we would always aim to pay it out of net operating cash flow. But there may be periods where we can't do that. But we want to normalise the distribution so that our security holders can have the certainty of the forecast that we make. But does that answer your question? I think.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
So
how do we work back up from that to get an earnings definition of some description?
We will. How do you work out? We've got our net operating cash flow number. We'll pay our 12.5 cents out of net operating cash flow, and which is set out in our.
I multiply by the number of security.
Yep.
So I get some dollars. What do I add back to that, and what do I end up with? Like, how do I get a profit or an operating cash flow out of that number? Like, where's that money coming from?
It's coming out of operations. I'm having trouble understanding the question. I'm sorry. What we have done in our forecast is we have taken our revenue numbers, and we have pared that back down to what will be our net operating cash flow for the year, and calculated exactly what we can afford to pay in terms of distribution from that.
Hi Peter, Lachlan Blake, Macquarie. Just in terms of your capital management, we've got about a 31% debt to EV at the moment. Are you able to give us a range that you'd be comfortable to see that move towards?
We have a review looking at those options at the moment. We don't have any set view in mind, but it will be prudent management of assets versus liabilities.
Okay.
It will be, within industry norms, it will be something that we feel we can manage on a
Are there any sort of
going forward,
covenants that we should know about? Or any covenants on the debt that we should know about?
No, well, we haven't. We're not negotiating it at the moment.
Okay.
We're in the position now where we have a range of options given where we sit, and we're reviewing those options. But as soon as we've made a conclusion and march on that.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Why is it that you adopt the stapled structure, the stapled security structure?
Sorry. The stapled... It's really a method of effectively getting distributions back in the hands of security holders. It's a structure which has been developed by a number of infrastructure funds that allows effective capital management and tax management and revenue management. It has a number of particular advantages.
Peter, at the time of the supplementary information that was released, we talked about the possible acquisition of some more assets from BNB. Can you provide an update on that?
From BNB?
Yeah, or I think it was BBI.
Well, at the supplementary materials, what we've indicated is there is a number of transactions. Still, the Inersys transaction is out there. In relation to Inersys, we don't have any agreement with BNB to buy that. That's the Inersys is the renewable energy company in Portugal that Babcock & Brown bought last December. We would like to buy that, but clearly it's subject to funds. Clearly it's subject to negotiating a price with Babcock & Brown. They're still in the process of restructuring that particular asset, so we're not expecting any movement on that this year. There are a number of... We're in constant negotiations with our colleagues at Babcock & Brown on the deal pipeline which they have. They've already noted in their results last year they had a deal pipeline of 3,000 megawatts. They have a very good deal pipeline, particularly in the US at the moment, which we've talked about. So the pipeline's quite significant. We haven't found that the relationship that we have with Babcock & Brown, we feel is probably one of the unique selling features of this fund, in that Babcock & Brown has invested 16 years of blood, sweat and tears in equipping a group of quite talented executives around the world with skills in wind energy financing, wind energy development and wind energy operations. And we piggyback on the back of that without having... It's quite seamless, you know, they have identified the assets. I think as the question Tom was asking about turbine supply, we just piggyback straight on the back of the relationships like people like Warren Murphy, who's one of our directors in the back of the moon, have with Miles George, other executives, or Peter Hofbauer, our chairman, which allows us entree at the top level, allows us to... they know our credibility, they know our credit rating, they know we deliver. And because we carry the name Babcock & Brown, I think it has allowed us in our first year to fight above our weight. And now that they've actually seen that we have a significant portfolio of assets working with Babcock & Brown, we can mine that skill. I think the importance of a fund always is to see where is the deal pipeline. And with us, we now get the opportunity to get some breathing space. Having developed a portfolio, to work on the operations, get the scales right, and also to view a range of assets and pick the one that meets our investment hurdles. And I think rather than chasing deals, we're reviewing deals, and I think we're very lucky in that capacity. They develop wind farms. They have a subsidiary in America, which is an operating company, which we contract with, which is an operator of wind farms. The reason we do that in America is that they have A unit holders who are institutional investors or tax investors who invest to get the production tax credits. And they set up an excellent operating company, which we have a management services agreement with very qualified operators to manage those wind farms, which they do on our behalf and on behalf of the A-Unit investors. So no more questions from the floor. The telephone moderator may care to see if there are any questions on the phone.
Thank you. This is Sashida from Genesis. Should you wish to ask a question, please dial star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. The first question is from John Hergy of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead, John.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Hi, John.
Question re the information that will come through. I noticed that in the asset overview of the portfolio, you've given quarterly information. Is that the type of information we could expect to get on a quarterly basis going forward?
No, we're reviewing what information we will give to the market. We've now given an update in August. We've given another update today. It is something that we are reviewing to see what is relevant and useful to the market, and in due course over the next month or so, we're going to comment further on that.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Max Wheeler of Tricom. Please go ahead, Max.
Good afternoon. Apologies if I asked the same question that's already been asked, but the line was pretty average. I just wanted to confirm that FY07 distributions are coming out of cash flow and not out of capital.
They are, yes.
Okay, great. In terms of the, I suppose, funding going forward for projects, you've got $311 million worth of cash on your balance sheet. How much of that has already been allocated to projects? And I suppose leading on from that, I know Lake Bonney needs about $300 million in debt. I know you've sort of flagged you possibly might be looking to raise $500 million of debt. Can you then extend that and explain what acquisitions you'd like to make in 07 from the portfolio of assets you've got lying in the wings?
Yeah, thanks, Max. In relation to the first question, in relation to how much of our cash is committed, about 60% of that is committed, and the rest of it sits in cash, or some of it, yeah, the rest of it sits in cash. In relation to Lake Bonney, that is a project finance debt structure, and we took the opportunity to refinance Lake Bonney 1, which is why this year we'll have a slightly additional principal repayment for Lake Bonney 1. So that project finance debt, we have an equity component of that of just over $100 million, but the balance of that won't appear directly on our balance sheet. It'll be part of our consolidated debt profile. Currently, we're in construction. We have construction finance to complete the construction of that project. Does that answer your question on that, Max?
Yep. Okay. Yep.
Going forward, we have a range of projects. The projects that we're looking at, we have some projects from Olivo, which we're expecting, and some projects from Germany, which we would look at, and certainly there are a number of projects out of the US. Which projects we do will, of course, depend on us applying our investment strategy and those projects reaching the relevant hurdle rates for our investment. They'll also depend very much on the conclusions we reach about the appropriate way to manage our capital and to raise funds based on our balance sheet gearing.
Would it be fair, though, I mean, to say that you'd like to, out of the Olivo assets, that there's 450 megawatts there, would you like to get your hands on 200 megawatts this year, or the full allocation of those assets?
Well, we don't. No, it's more the other way. If the assets are accretive and they're good assets and we have the appropriate funding available, we will definitely buy them. We have, I think, as I mentioned, an extraordinary number of opportunities to buy, and we're in the very good position that we can actually consider those in the cold light of day, given our funding options and given the investment profile they have, that I think in relation to this fund in particular, finding opportunities is not going to be the issue.
Okay. Can I just ask one last question if I can, whilst I've got you on the line? In terms of the cash flows coming in from the US assets, the prospectus had for FY07 around about $11 million coming in. You've bought those additional assets recently, and I think that you said that there should be about $22 million additionally coming from those. So is it fair to assume that all up I should be expecting around about $33 million worth of cash flow from the US assets in 07?
In 07? I'd have to check that, Max. I might have to get back to you about that.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, the figure I had in my head was 22 million, but I'm not sure where the 30 million comes from.
Supplementary information, but we'll come back to that.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, thanks.
The next question is from Tony Lee of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead, Tony.
Good afternoon, Peter. The integration of the reporting, risk management and operational systems, does that involve any significant or material CapEx spend not included in the PDS estimates?
No. No, we have provisions for approximately $3.5 million, Jeff, of CapEx spend over the next couple of years in the budget. And that's mainly, most of it is people and systems and really deploying the accounting software, the asset management software, it's PeopleSoft and T3, and an overlay SCADA system, which we're going to use to coordinate all our independent SCADA systems at each wind farm. So it's a bit of a spend on IT, but it's been built into the forecast. There's no special capital spend that we'll need to make that isn't there.
Right. Just another question, if I can, on distributions. You mentioned distribution growth of 3.5% in the medium term. I assume you haven't set any target payout ratio of free cash flows for distribution going forward. I just wanted to understand if, for example, you had a year of below wind speed and hence below portfolio generation and unable to meet 3.5% growth in distributions. Are you likely to fund the gap through debt?
No, we will never. We won't fund the gap through debt, but our aim is to manage our net operating cash flow and our available cash so that if we occasionally get those anomalies, we can actually normalise the distribution and the distribution growth. But our aim, without being slavish to it, is to pay distributions out of net operating cash flow. But there may be occasions where we have to draw on cash to pay for that, but we will never draw on debt, or we won't draw on debt.
Okay, thank you.
Just a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. The next question is from Scott Kelly of UBS. Please go ahead, Scott.
Good afternoon, Peter. Just two questions. With respect to distribution guidance that's been provided for FY07, you've got on the notes there, subject to P50 wind performance fees and Spanish tariffs. Just on the Spanish tariff side of things, are you referring to your base case there, or are you referring to where Spanish tariffs have been over the last 12 months?
Jeff, you might want to answer that. Scott, just on the Spanish tariffs, the forecast doesn't take account of what we've earned in FY06. As you're aware, that was quite an elevated market option tariff that we earned.
Yep.
We certainly haven't taken that into account. Our assumptions for the forecast for the Olivo portfolio remain conservative in our view, notwithstanding the review that's potentially by the end of the year, or will be by the end of the year. So the first part of your question, Scott, was the tariffs was one.
Yeah, well, that was the first part, and with respect to distributions. The second question, which is completely different, is with respect to investment criteria, which Peter's mentioned for acquisitions going forward. Recently, BBW has provided upfront payment for Lake Bonnie 2 and a prepayment for the framework agreement with Plumbeck. One of BBW's points of differentiation, I understood, was not to take development risk. This appears to be, in Lake Bonnie's case, albeit small, taking some construction risk. Is there any change to that investment strategy going forward? And secondly, do you target higher IRRs for those projects as a result?
Scott, we haven't changed our strategy about taking development risk. We won't take development risk. We've always said we will take some construction risk, but we will only take construction risk where we feel we are very well protected with good EPC contracts, performance bonds, appropriate warranties, and that's exactly what we have down in Lake Bonnie 2. We're very comfortable about our position there. In relation to Plandec, we made an advance of €6 million, and we're fully secured on that. So, we are fully confident that we about our security position in relation to that advance. So, and the money which we've advanced there will be offset against some of the projects that we actually take from Plan Beck as well.
Okay, and just one final question with respect to the US assets. My understanding was that banks wouldn't lend to wind projects. Is that a fundamental change, and are you able do you see that as an opportunity?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the question that banks won't lend on US projects. I think it's the economics. What we have is significant cash flows out of the US assets, which clearly can be leveraged. And yes, we think the banks will certainly have an appetite for including those cash flows in a debt facility sometime in the future.
I guess the question is, why are they sitting at 0% today?
It's the way we fund them. They're all equity funded.
Yep.
And the A units take most of their IRR from their equity investment comes from the production tax credits that they achieve. So they're usually institutions or utilities.
So does that mean funding will be at not at the asset level and at BBW level?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
There is an opportunity in the future where once all of the A units have their benefit to acquire those units, and you could refinance sometime in the future, but we'd be looking at the current arrangements.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from James Harvey of Australian Ethical Investment. Please go ahead, James.
Hi, Peter. It's just a quick one about asbestos, really. Can you just clarify for me, was that compensation payment was purely on delays, was it? There wasn't a performance component?
On asbestos?
Yeah.
The payment, the $5.25 million?
Yes.
Yes, it was a failure to have the wind farm fully available to us.
Right. And so does that colour your judgment of them, or do you think that would have been the same with any manufacturer in that situation?
Yes, it really reflects the nature of the construction agreements. We have a good relationship with Vestas. I mean, the group has brought a lot of turbines from them all around the world.
Yep.
But, you know, we had good remedies under the original contract, but we also worked with them to zero in on what the technical issues were and rearrange the contract so they could be very focused on those activities over the next 12 months.
All right, so really going forward, it wouldn't your choice of turbines is you'd still be looking at the current supplies you're using and not biasing it away from the investors then.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions from the phones.
Thank you. If there are no further questions, then I'll bring this presentation to an end. Thanks very much for coming along and for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes the presentation. You may now disconnect your lines.